keeping it real on CliffCentral.com. WeChat. Go to the Cliff Central account, tap connect, then message to show. On radio. On radio. More of the good stuff. CliffCentral.com.
That life. All about lifestyle, relationships, cars, and gadgets. From Cassie to the bird.
From Cassie to the bird.
It's that time of the week. I know it's a bit strange. It's a Thursday at exactly 11 o'clock and you've just been listening to Alan Ford, and suddenly here I am, the voice of Dumisha Masha on Black Life. You didn't expect that, did you? Well, we've moved to a new time slot. It's a new show. It's a new everything, baby. And we're here only on Cliff Central. Today, we've got a very exciting lineup for you. We're going to be talking to some guys, friends of mine, actually co-producers, who are going to Cannes. By themselves. They're just going to be out there doing their thing, enjoying the Cannes lifestyle without me. But that's okay, because they're doing it for a good cause. They're going to Cannes because we're screening The Beginning, a brand new film that not only do I star in, but with these fine gentlemen. I wish you could see them. And in fact, if you can't see them, check out my Twitter at Dumisha Masha, and you will see the guys I'm in studios with. Ladies, these are the kind of guys you want to be looking at. I mean, if you're a guy and you like guys, you might want to look at these guys. Don't look at me, look at these guys. But they're in the studio with us. In fact, before we go any further, let me introduce them. Mr. Brad Katzen and Mr. Sean Naidu. How you guys doing?
What's up?
How's it going? Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's good to be here with you guys. Are you looking forward to Cannes?
We are so looking forward to Cannes, man. I think the excitement has hit fever pitch, as they say.
It's going to be it's a once in a lifetime experience, and yeah, we're psyched that we're got the opportunity that they accepted our short film, and yeah, they're going to screen it for us. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to be talking style tips today. We're going to talk about where you can eat. If you're listening to us right now, we're going to talk about a lot of really exciting things on the show. We've got a full jam packed show for you today, but because we're going to Cannes, we're going to put this into how does this work for Cannes. But before we go any further, I want to ask you guys something. How did this film come about? Brad, you wrote the movie. Why did you come up with this kind of movie? First of all, tell us what the movie's about, The Beginning.
Okay, so yeah, so the short film, it's a kind of a spiritual story about this woman dealing with the loss of her daughter. And as she's grappling with these issues, she meets this man, played by Dumisha, who reveals to her that, in fact, her daughter hasn't died, but she herself has passed away, and she's actually having to come to terms with her own death and the fact that she's not going to see her daughter again and move through that sort of cycle into the next phase.
So, like, the daughter is not dead. Is the daughter alive, or is the daughter also passed away?
No, the daughter is alive, which comes as a revelation later on in the
film. Okay, because, you know, on the trailer it says, dealing with the loss, how do you deal with the loss of a child? And I was always like under the impression that the daughter was still alive and well. So the daughter is not lost.
Yeah, I know. There's some ambiguity to that, which is nice to kind of just like develop as you go.
I mean, death is an interesting topic to talk about. But people don't see it as a very upbeat topic and as a very box office friendly topic to talk about, especially as your first film. Why did you go for this particular topic?
You know, it's going to sound weird, but I guess, like, I mean, life and death, it's a fascinating thing. It's something that everyone can relate to, because at the end of the day, this is what we're all moving towards that eventually. You know, there's we have a limited time here, and the big question is what happens afterwards. It's always such a, there is no answer. So I kind of think I just find it interesting to explore that aspect of, like, where do we go afterwards if we go anywhere? And this just seemed like an interesting way of sort of wrapping that up in a film that, you know, that I thought would be quite engaging for people to see.
Okay. And how did you get involved, Sean?
that's an interesting question. Well, Brad and I have been taking care of Brad for a long time.
Yeah.
As a producer goes. And we've been working together in the advertising space. And when we had the script that Brad sent to me to say, should we go into the film space, we said, let's do it. It was just exciting, and we looked forward to getting involved in something that both of us had for a long time wanted to do. You know, we sort of, our day jobs is in advertising, but our creative space was, you know, in the film space.
Look, a lot of people in South Africa are very interested in film. I think we're a country that is curious about film. As much as we're not a country that necessarily supports local film, I must say, we're curious about it. A lot of people think that film is all glamorous and it's fun to do because we see the Hollywood side of it. And even that can be quite tough. What is it that you do as a producer exactly, Sean?
What don't I do as a producer?
What do producers do except just come on set and eat food from the craft table?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm the guy that's allowed to be late on set and allowed to just relax. The thing is that there's a whole lot of moving parts when you come to a production that you're putting together. There's anything from, you know, the pre-production side, getting the necessary. If you needed a tissue on set because you were crying and you didn't have one, is my fault or someone in my team's fault.
And if I can say, like, Sean is the guy who will get shit done. When we're out on location and we have traffic in the background, Sean is the guy who will go to the police station and just organize the road to get closed. Just like that.
Okay, so basically a producer is someone who organizes for everything to happen. Yeah. He's Mr. Plan.
He puts
Mr.
it together so the
makes shit happen.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, the police station example was a pretty interesting one. Okay. We had a whole lot of traffic causing lots of noise when we were trying to shoot. And we hadn't actually planned to be there. It was a very quick thing. And we just kind of went and, you know, I've got this new hashtag I'd like to put out there. It's called Just Ask. Because when we just go and ask and they come and put the little yellow ribbon across the street and don't allow taxis to go past, it's quite exciting.
I mean, the cool thing about the beginning, right, is number one, I mean, Brad, you wrote it.
Right.
You directed it.
I did.
You did the score.
Indeed. Yes.
I suppose that was out of necessity, but also because you're actually pretty good at all those three things. Tell me, I never thought that you had a background in music. What is your background in music? Are you formerly a composer? Are you a pop star? Why were you not an idol?
I'm really big in Germany, man. Music's always been also like a side passion of mine. I've really loved it. And it's something I kind of like became, I guess I'm like self-taught in a lot of ways. I've just always been interested in, you know, dabbling on like on the computer. You can get like, there's so much software that you can do that's really, really creatively liberating, you know. And to be able to just kind of like explore that is it's a lot of fun to be able to put that together. And I just kind of just harnessed those skills for when I knew I'd want to try and do some music and, you know, use it for a film specifically, that it seemed like a great tool to put that together.
The movie has a very specific feel and sound. What made you come up with that sound, and like, where were you? What space were you in? The instruments? Come on, man.
Yeah, you know, everything came down from story. Like that's always the starting point, I think, is to see what would the character be hearing or experiencing emotionally through that.
Okay.
And that's what the score is meant to sort of influence and dictate, you know, like if it's a very classical kind of motif and you want that to inherently relate to the character.
Okay, because what I noticed as well in the film that I really enjoyed. I mean, I'm in the film, obviously, but you can still critique a film even being in it. I mean, I always critique films. I know if a film that I'm in is going to be great or it's going to be lousy, and sometimes like, is it cringeworthy or not? This one definitely is something that I'm very proud of.
That's good to know. Phew. Okay, we did the job.
But when you made the music, did you like? Do you have like a whole studio space, a keyboard? Do you have like grand piano somewhere?
I mean, it's quite
in a massive glass palace with a wooden floor.
I wish. No, it's more like it's more like a bedroom producer kind of thing where I've got the keyboards and I've got some instruments, but most of it comes off on the computer because you can get virtual instruments now, like software based instruments which sound incredible. I mean, it's hard to you won't be able to tell the difference mostly if you do it right, you know. And that's what I think is really cool about the space that we're in now, where anyone can, if they have like a computer, you can get access to these free virtual instruments online and just go nuts.
Okay, Sean. What? You wanted to tell us something?
No.
You look like you're poised to tell me something really interesting. But it's okay, because
I've been to Brad's studio. Yeah? So
studio, inverted commas.
I'm just picturing this thing.
Do you jam with Brad? Do you guys like, do you get on the drum kit?
I try to dabble in a little bit of guitar, if you know what I mean. But I can hold all of like about three chords.
Got a Bollywood album coming out.
Awesome. That's pretty cool. Because like, people are listening to Sean right now. They don't know. He looks like a Bollywood star, actually.
Whatever.
When are you actually? Is that our next
than
film?
Bollywood.
That's what we're gonna.
Are we doing Bollywood? Are we gonna? You know, because you gotta like cash in on that.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, that's what's happening right now. But speaking of like Bollywood and Hollywood, what do you think that you're gonna be bringing to the table, guys? That you're taking to Cannes that people have never seen before with this film, Sean?
Curry.
We had
which
curry
table?
On set.
Dinner table.
I think that was very smart as a producer. By the way, I must tell you guys, Sean brought cooked for us a biryani. And at first I was like, you know, people say, a lot of Indian people that you meet, every Indian can cook a biryani, right? And then you taste it and it's like, okay, whatever.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. I'm sure you followed, you know, the recipe online. Yeah. But Sean's biryani was absolutely special. Amazing. Yeah. I was blown away.
I was like,
I haven't had that kind of biryani in a very long time. And I have a lot of Indian friends who say they can cook biryani.
Biryani make you want to slap your mama, you mean?
You know what I'm saying? That biryani was amazing, man. So a lot of people don't know that you're not only are you a great producer, you know, visual artist, creative, you're an actor yourself as well, by the way. You're also an amazing cook.
Nah, I try to cook. My mom is an amazing cook. I mean, this lady, I don't know, like she...
But everyone says that about their mom. I'm very honest. No. Like, my mom is a so-so cook, okay? Mom, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I love your food, you know that, but... As I grow up, I've tasted better.
No, like jokes aside, I can't even lie. My mother cooks like everybody just goes ape about my mother's food. So, I know I'm biased, but it's the truth as well. Right. So, it's
from
on Wikipedia.
From your biryani, if you're saying her biryani is better than that, then I can say she must be a pretty
amazing
cook.
You learn from the best.
Let's put it this way: my mom has not tasted my biryani because I cannot simply cook if she's around. It just makes no sense.
Do you just fall apart? I can't do this. I'm too nervous.
I'm sorry.
The pressure, man.
No, but hey, we're looking forward to Cannes. I think what we are hoping to sort of get out of Cannes though, is to try and expand on what we're doing and the network that we can maybe get. You know, it's an international film festival, so we're not only going to be getting Hollywood types over there. We're going to hopefully get the world out there, you know. So we're really looking to tap into meeting and connecting with those kind of people.
What do you think the film that you guys have shot, that we have all shot, The Beginning, is going to bring to Cannes that maybe they don't have at the moment?
Well, as far as we know, I think we're actually the only South African film in the festival in any capacity. I mean, there's always a delegation. I know, like, the NFVF, they're sending a slate of films, and I think to markets and stuff. But in terms of actually with an active role in the festival, as far as I know, I think we're the only South African film that's playing in, like, the short film corner and, you know, being active in that space. So I think for us, it's just representing our country and really having that presence that we'll be able to bring to sort of an international scale, you know?
Yeah, no, and I think there's a lot of people that sort of look to the short film corner for upcoming talent, for new emerging ideas, you know, and so we are looking forward to putting South Africa in any small way that we can contribute. We're looking to get that out there, you know, and to say to people, like, this is a start. I mean, it's the beginning of hopefully bigger things to come.
All right, that deserves a vuvuzela. They're going to have to be listening to that at Cannes, okay? You guys better take some vuvuzelas with you.
Yeah, good idea.
All right, that's enough.
My ears are bleeding.
Sorry. So, actually, let's talk about a bit of style tips, because you guys are going to be out there. You're going to be well-dressed, right? And we've got the Black Lifestyle tips. With shoes, let me tell you guys what you must do and what you must try and avoid. Take pride in keeping your shoes polished. So make sure you get there and your shoes are clean, champs. If they're brand new, it's better. But if they've been around for a bit, make sure that they're not scuffed. They're polished. Brad, you make sure, right? Every time.
I'm writing notes as we speak.
Because people will notice one way or another. The first thing, especially as a man, right? The first thing people look at is your shoes and your hands.
Right.
So make sure that you've got nice, clean hands and you've got clean shoes. The second thing about shoes is always match your belt and your shoes. Like, Brad, you know, I know you're a white boy and everything, but that doesn't mean you don't have to, you got to look sorry about it, okay? Your shoes got to match your belt. If you're wearing a brown belt, you have to wear a brown shoe.
Where were you 2 years ago?
If you know this, you must say, Brad, come on. Don't make me push the stereotype. You know this, right, Sean?
Yes, don't make that mistake.
And you got recently married, so you should know this. Dress like you're getting married.
Do I look like I need tips in the dressing department?
Well, you never know. You never know, you know, Sean.
Don't make me go.
Don't make
you
go hulk on me. Don't go hulk on me. Okay. Never allow the heels of your shoes to wear down. Nothing looks cheaper on a gentleman than, like, heels that are just... Especially heels on the side. You know, they, like, kind of go up on the side. They're not even, like, down properly. They're just, like, weird down. Okay, they're kind of sideways. It just looks awkward. Don't do that. And, you know, guys, shoes are an investment piece. So if you're going to spend the most money of the outfit, if you're going to do that, make it on the shoes. Okay?
Okay.
So where are you guys getting your outfits from?
Well, we are very blessed. I got to tell you, we are so blessed for something that is essentially new. In the space, but Stutterford has been kind enough to allow us to come to their Sandton City store and grab some stuff that will make us look as glamorous as we are supposed to amongst the stars that we'll be rubbing shoulders with.
Okay, so...
gotta represent.
Hang on a second. If Starterfit is a huge shop. Yeah. Do they give you like a little section, or do they actually give you... Like anything you can wear in the shop is yours.
Anything that you think looks good and you grab.
Really?
Yeah, no.
So, but what if something smells good on you? Because they've got that section as well. Like, can you take
like
three
perfumes?
Nah, I think we must behave ourselves a little bit.
No, shut up. You're not even hooking me up. No, hang on.
Baby steps.
Okay, can I ask a question?
Okay,
I'm one of the three production partners on this film, right? Does Statifits know that I'm not actually going to Cannes?
Damn it, the secret's out. I'm going to get a suit for later, you know? Damn it.
You went and messed it up for yourself.
All right, but okay, maybe they're not listening right now. No. We don't know for sure. Maybe I can still go in this afternoon. If I went in this afternoon and picked something up for Cannes...
They'll arrest you. They'll get the South African police.
There's some security guys that might give you a bit of a look.
Oh, come on, guys. This is some bullshit.
Look, all I'm saying is if you want to try, go for it, but I can't be held responsible and I don't have bail money because, you know, Cannes expensive.
But let us know so we can video you getting arrested.
Okay, that would be pretty cool. You can take that to Cannes. Show them how badass I am.
That would be great.
Like, in the film, I feel like I play this, like, sweet little angel guy. Well, not little. There's nothing little about it. But I play this sweet angel guy who's all good and takes all of LaToya's shit. Like, in real life, I would be like, bitch, sit the fuck down.
Creative license, right?
I mean, like, Brad, you know, that was not a black angel. Like, if that was a black, I don't know what you were. Right. I felt like, I don't know, I'm out of character here. Is this real enough?
I wanted to see you some range.
Okay, you want to extend some range, right?
Yeah, we're building you up now.
Don't act like you would at home.
Exactly.
Yeah. But anyway, you guys are taking a film as well to Cannes, a trailer that we've made called Fight Town. What's that about?
Right. So yeah, one of the benefits for that we want to get out of the when we go to the festival is that the fact that our short film's featuring there is definitely like a foot in the door, and we're using that to kind of leverage ourselves to get interest and, you know, co-production financial funding for a feature that we're trying to develop, which is Fire Town, which is essentially this intense South African thriller about a woman whose daughter is kidnapped, and when the police can't help her, she enlists the help of one of like Soweto's sort of, you know, biggest gangsters to help her find her daughter and take her into this dark underbelly of the South African crime world. And we think it's going to be quite an epic story, because, you know, the space of South African films right now I don't feel like they're pushing the envelope the way they should be. And we're here to change that up.
Well, how would you change that up? I mean, when you say they're not pushing the envelope, how would you push the envelope? I'm really keen to understand that. Yeah?
I think I'd like to just say before Brad talks about that,
I'm gonna hold you on that.
I'm actually responding to the same thing as well, is that we are certainly not trying to elevate ourselves to like we have the answer, you know, the messiah of our film type of thing, by no means. But I think our only gripe is that we tend to borrow too much from the past. You know, we want to make it all about South Africa's dark history, and a lot of the films just lean and rely too much on that kind of thing.
But I think that's still a story that needs to be told, because we can't forget about the past. I mean, it's only 20 years ago.
No, by all means. But
why is it okay that we can still watch Holocaust movies or movies about slavery, but we can't even watch movies about apartheid that happened like...
No, it's not about like not being able to. I think especially when you want to be a voice that people listen to and people that like respond to and look forward to hearing what you had to say, you certainly can't, when you're unknown, come out with that, you know. You can't make that your debut story, you know what I mean? It's a bit like sensitive material at the same time. People got to trust you with that kind of thing. And so for us, we just want to make like really entertaining, universally, themed stories with strong characters and really just get that kind of momentum going. And then once people have a certain amount of respect for what we're doing, if we're good enough to do it,
I think you should know by now. You're asking people to give you millions of dollars to shoot movies and you're still not sure?
No, I mean, we've got the confidence in ourselves. But what I'm saying is, particularly, I think I'm talking about the audience here. You know, the audience are very, very...
they're a fickle bunch. Let's just call a spade. Okay, are you going to be doing this film in Afrikaans just to make sure that people go and watch it?
We're gonna have it in English.
You're going to have it in English?
It's going to be in English because we have faith that the story is... it's broad enough that I think everyone will be able to find something to relate to in the story.
I mean, let's talk about the state of art. We may as well, because you've taken us down that path, Sean.
It's the elephant in the room.
We're going to talk about Firetown, and then Sean took us to the South African film industry, and now we got to talk about it.
Damn.
But I mean, Sean, you say all these nice things, right? But then you look at like a lot of South African films, especially films that are like action genre type films. When it comes to black films, black people don't watch movies. English white South Africans don't watch South African movies. The only market at the moment that is viable in this country is a white Afrikaans market, perhaps an Indian Bollywood market, but don't try and make a film like Joey Rusdeen and the guys did that's set in South Africa for the Indian market, because only three Indian guys will go. So the only loyal market that we have in South Africa is the Afrikaans one. Am I wrong, guys?
It does come across that way. I think you are very much correct in saying that. It's tragic.
How do we change that, though? I mean, we've had movies like Inamba Namba, right? We had Material, which I thought was an amazing film. It wasn't just an Indian movie. It was a South African movie. We had films like Hear Me Move, blah, 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 so on and so forth. But the only movies that make any sort of money and anyone goes to watch are still the Afrikaans movies.
Yeah, but I think at the same time, you got to like almost understand that you are saying you got to earn the respect of the audience. And perhaps there just isn't enough consideration of what does this audience want. Why are they not going to see these films? What is it about the Afrikaans market that sends them to? I mean, they have a loyalty to the sort of grouping, you know, to their race group. But that's like not a good enough reason to support something or not. You know what I mean? I wouldn't want the Indian market to support me purely because I'm Indian. You know what I mean? Nothing wrong with that. No, but if anything, I'm not Indian. I'm South African.
Now, third largest population outside of India. We used to be number one or number two outside of India.
Well,
now
let me tell you, I've been to India not less than 2 months ago, and I'm not Indian. I'm sorry. Like, I've got nothing in common with those dudes on that side.
Okay. But in terms of the market, the number of the audience, it's a great slice of an Indian audience. But having said that, I guess you got a point. They shouldn't support you just because you're an Indian guy making Indian movies. They should support you because it's a good film, and then by virtue of it being a good film, it will be universally appealing.
And yeah, but that's what's important, I think, because also you want to earn the audience's respect, as Sean was saying. And you know, when you look at the state of, I mean, some of the films you mentioned, there's definitely merit to them, but if we're going to be brutally honest, I don't know if they can play on an international scale. And when you're looking at the films that are playing, you're on an international scale. People have a choice between the new Avengers or the new South African dance film. It's kind of obvious what people are going to want to choose to see.
So what are you going to do that's so different, Brad? I mean, what is your plan, especially with Firetown? I mean, the beginning is a short film. It's more like a showcase film.
Exactly.
You could turn that into a feature, right? But for the kind of market that we're talking about, it seems more like a cinema nouveau film. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I'm going with a more artistic license on that side.
With Firetown, what are you going to do that's different? Because that's straight up feature, that's action, it's Skopskiet and Donner.
Well, that's it, and that's what we're capitalizing on, because the idea is after seeing, you know, looking at the landscape here, what I'd like to do is I want to get onto that international scale, and that's part of the whole Cannes ideal, is getting there and almost focusing first on the international side and getting that kind of recognition, because I think that will then help feed into getting that respect that I'm talking about for the audience when they see that, you know, if there's a South African film being recognized internationally first, then when we come, you know, when you bring it to South Africa and like local audiences, there's already that sort of recognition in their mindset of what this film is and what it's the kind of accolades that it's achieving, you know, provided that it comes across and it actually works out the way we want it to work out. Then I'm confident that that'll be the sort of thing that will push audiences.
But from
into
a storyline point of view, just straight up, why do people want to watch when it comes to an action film? My theory, my personal theory, and I'm going to put it out there, is that when I saw some of these South African films, the major problem that we as South African writers and filmmakers have is we don't like a happy ending. We don't like a clear, fully set out, satisfying happy ending. I went to watch Fast and the Furious 7, which broke all box office records recently.
It's ridiculous.
And it wasn't a particularly great film. My wife and I, she sat there because she's like a great film critic, and she hated most of it. She wanted to go watch the Avengers, but I had already seen the Avengers. No. So I was like, hold up, woman, we're going to go see Fast and Furious, damn it, because I wear the pants in this house.
I like it.
It's not exactly how she would have said that conversation went, but you know, that's what I'm telling you guys.
But speaking about Fast and the Furious, for example, right? I know a whole bunch of Indians that went to see Fast and the Furious.
Of course.
And I ain't seen one Indian in Fast and the Furious. So
yeah, but they love cars. I mean, like, that whole movie is an Indian movie. Like, those cars were taken to, you know, when you take your car to an Indian guy who does something with the cars. That's what they did in Fast and Furious.
Yeah. For like 2 hours.
Yeah, for like 2 hours.
Sound systems and everything. No, but that's the thing. Like, Fast and Furious is like the characters that you navigate towards. You start to like them. You follow their journey through the series.
No doubt. But my point is, right at the end, the whole point is like the whole gang finally makes it. And you see the reward of them going through all that crap, which is to get a chance to be at the beach with Paul Walker and his kid and his wife and just sit there and have a happy ending. Like a proper, like ridiculously unviable happy ending. There was no way Jason Statham was going to get beat up like that.
Happiest ending ever.
And that dude should have died. What's his name? The one with the big voice. He always has to talk like, what's his
Vin
name?
Diesel.
Vin Diesel.
Oh, right.
Vin Diesel should have died in that last car crash, man. But because Hollywood, they don't even do mouth-to-mouth. All she has to do is talk to him about how she remembers the wedding. And she said that if he dies, then she would die. And then that brings that motherfucker back to life. Give me a break!
They need another 3 sequels, man. That's what the...
You know what I'm saying? But I think at the end of the day, that's what we watch Hollywood movies for. Because we invest, right, in those characters having to go through being the protagonist, having to go past an antagonist, which was Jason Statham's role. And then, once they have gotten what they need to get, there is the payout.
Sure,
which is,
sure,
everyone gets to be happy and go to the beach in Puerto Rico. And then him and Paul Walker can race for the last time. And Paul Walker's in a white car because that is his chariot to heaven.
You do know that you're doing a whole bunch of spoilers right now. You're supposed to say spoiler alert.
I hope you've all seen the movie.
They've had enough people watching that movie. I need to just say it how it is, okay?
Yeah,
I'm breaking it down for South African filmmakers.
Yeah.
Firetown. Is it definitely going to have a happy ending?
I'm not answering that question. We don't know that,
dude,
for sure. All I'll say is that with Firetown, it's going to be everyone will be able to relate to the situation because the loss of a loved one, everyone can relate to. A missing child.
No, no, we're not talking Firetown. A missing child. Okay, Firetown. Missing child.
Yes.
I thought we had gone back to the beginning. Death. Okay. Firetown. Missing child. Mother loses child.
Boom.
Okay. So this it's a white woman, right?
Right,
she goes to the wrong part of town.
The worst.
All sitting in the cinema going, "Don't go there, white lady. What are you doing?"
Like, what the hell is she thinking? What is she like?
Although nowadays it's like middle class lady. Even if it was a black lady in like a nice car, would be like, "Dude,
yeah,
don't
exactly.
go there with your Louis Vuitton bag. They're going to kidnap Usmongile."
It's dark. It gets dark. It does. It gets dark.
Okay. And then that happens, right? It happens. Our worst fear is realized. And then now we're like, "Oh my gosh. What is she going to do about it?" Because we know the cops won't help. You've been to a police station. You try to call 10-111.
We know.
And then they put
yeah.
you on hold for 30 minutes. And you're listening to like panpipe music. You're like, "I've got an emergency. They're breaking into the house." And your call is important to us.
You're like, number 532.
Answer the call.
Which police station have you been calling? I'm just asking.
I had a domestic violence incident once.
It's a hard life.
No, but it's real.
With Firetown, it's exactly that. It's like a person making all the wrong choices, being in the wrong part of town. But now the child's taken. Now, I'm a believer that, you know, let's leave the past be the past, even if it's 5 minutes ago. And what are we doing now and how do we look to the future?
Is that what you use when you and your wife are having an altercation? Let's let the past be the past.
Yeah, no, that's my go-to.
Does it use
thing.
Word?
I'm just like, you know what, babe?
Okay, I don't want to get in your way, though. Yeah, let the past be the past.
You're always on my way. You're so big.
Sorry. Okay, so let the past be the past. And what do we do now, Sean?
Do
we do now?
Diane is here.
Yeah.
And the cops can't help. And all of the things that she's tried has gone wrong and it didn't work. How does she fix it? And then where we find her, she's at that place where she's making decisions to save the life of a child. And then the journey for the audience and the film is, does it get there?
You does know, it happen?
How
far is she willing to go?
Yeah.
Really, like it's the desperation of this character of like trying to see, she will do whatever it takes. And whatever it takes is not always the best, most happy ending in a lot of ways. You know, it'll take you to places that you don't think you can go until you're in that situation.
Right.
And that's what I want to show people and what I want the film to explore is just that desperation of what will you do for the one that you love.
Ooh, what the
hell? Oh,
that's what she should do.
No, but You've been on Facebook, right? You'll see somebody knocked a dog, and then the whole of Facebook goes crazy. That person, if I could get my hands on them, I would do this, that, and that. Then the kid, whatever. We all think we know what we do in a situation, right? You know, presented with the opportunity to take on a bad guy.
But I guess the great thing about this, I don't know. I've studied, you know, martial arts here and there. I know how to shoot. I'd like to think I'd know what to do, but I'd probably be like in the corner begging for my life.
That's why you're our consultant on the film, Tamisha.
Will you be able to say,
please let me go?
No, will you be able to say, like Liam Neeson, you know, I have a particular set of skills. I will find
you. You want me to do it right now?
Yes, please.
I have a particular set of skills, and I will find you. How was that? Do I get the joke? Do I get the gig?
I got chills, eh? I got chills.
Yeah, gooseys.
But I'd like to hear a hero with a different kind of voice, you know? Like, can you imagine, would you buy it if the guy was saying it like, I have a particular set of skills, and I will find you.
That's my next one. It's done. That's what we're doing next.
Because the guy's from Boxburg. He's a badass.
Yeah.
My response to that guy would be like, do you promise?
Please come over. Please, I beg you. Let me give you my address. But I mean, obviously, at the end of the day, the there has to be a neat and happy ending. We have to see that our protagonist gets what it is without spoiling anything. Do you find that that's important to you?
Like a happy ending?
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
A viably happy ending.
I think it all just serves story. If the story that's being told takes the character to the right ending, like her right conclusion, that's what it comes down to, I think, at the end of the day. If it's a happy ending, it doesn't matter. It's about, is she satisfied with the conclusion as a character? Is her character at a logical point to end the film where she's satisfied with the things? Because sometimes, you know, there's a handful of films where the ambiguity can help as well, of like, you know, perhaps she didn't get what she wanted, but she found something else in the process.
Okay.
You know, so...
Well, here's the thing, right? A lot of people in South Africa complain about the quality of the work that we do in this country in terms of the films. And yet, some of the highest watched TV shows and films in this country are the ones with the worst quality. I mean, Generations is a case in point. I'm sorry, Mfundi. I talk about your show all the time and I'm always dissing it, but the truth is the truth, right? It's no the comment. Highest watched show on TV. That and Our Perfect Wedding. I don't know if you guys have seen Our Perfect Wedding. You must just watch Our Perfect Wedding if you really want to get into the psyche of the South African viewer. Okay, it's on catch up. Don't worry.
I'm scared. I'm afraid.
You have to watch it if you're going to call yourself a South African filmmaker.
Wow. Okay.
And I mean, the topic is interesting. It's about people who are getting married and then we get to see them. But they go to like the most dingy rural kind of areas. They don't just go to the township. They go, you know, when you go past the township and you just keep going
out,
and even the people in the township are like, they look down on those people. That's where they go. Okay.
Damn. Okay.
And then they're like, this is South Africa. And you're like, no, it's not South Africa. That's not how people I know growing up got married, but fine. And people love it. They're eating it up. And they eat up things like Generations. You guys, though, go out of your way to make sure that you shoot very high quality stuff. Fire Town, the trailer, as well as the beginning, was shot on the latest top of the range red. This is the same camera that they use to shoot Tom Cruise films.
Mm. Pretty much, yeah.
It's past 4K, 6K, right?
We want to play on that international scale. We want to be able to show this to like the big wigs at whatever film production companies we meet in Cannes, and just be able to say that this is what we're able to pull off. We can do this. It's not just the small stuff in South Africa that they're putting together.
How did you manage to pull that off? Sean, I'm going to go back to you. You wrote the thing. We asked you about that. You're the producer. How did you manage to get
take it away
that kind of take on your set with no money?
Hashtag just ask.
Okay.
I said it at the beginning. I'll say it at the end.
All right.
Literally just ask.
I mean, but ask who?
Dave, we're not going to give that name. I just did. No, I'm kidding.
Oh no, you got to give Dave props, man. You know,
okay, you got to ask the right person, right?
You got to have that level of network, I guess. You know, we are very, very. I mean, look, let's put it this way as well, and a lot of people don't realize this, but when you hear someone like myself on the radio for the first time today, you assume it's always been like this, but it has not. You know, this is 10 years in the making.
Yeah.
And throughout that 10-year journey, we've been working with different people and doing different things. And, you know, hopefully being nice enough and, you know, to get people to like you and want to stay loyal to you. So that network does form over time. Interestingly enough, with the DOP in question for the film, it wasn't really from something as far back as 10 years. He was someone that we approached very recently. But he was also very kind to be a part of the project, you know, and to come on board with us having all...
That's Dave Pina, right?
Yes, yes.
To those who don't know, Dave Pina. I'm going to put that name out there. David Pinar.
Don't ruin his name now.
I'm just saying like a voiceover. David Pinar.
Yeah, there we go.
That's silky. Silky smooth.
And we had, you know, we had him and he came with and he was able to shoot with that beautiful.
And he bought all these
camera,
toys and all these toys, the whole exactly. box and everything, right?
And you know, a good crew and we got it.
We were
done.
Very fortunate to have a great crew. Your sister Sam, Katz.
Yeah,
she came on as the makeup artist.
She kicks ass.
Did an excellent job.
She's a makeup artist to the start. It's not just like we couldn't have been able to afford her if she wasn't.
No, we
like,
would definitely not be able to afford
her. If I didn't know her.
If you didn't know her, Tanisha, if you weren't connected to my sister, I would have no way of gotten her involved.
No, for real though. That's the truth. Because I think the only reason why she did the makeup was because I was in the film.
Yeah,
right?
that's completely it. That is so right about that. She's, yeah.
I thought she'd be crazy. Like, I know I'm your sister, but I can't do this. I've got to go to a real job.
She's going to go and hang out with Clint Eastwood and Adam Sandler in like Sun City. That's what she's
exactly. Because that was the last film that she did, right? I mean, she does films. She does like Hollywood stuff.
She actually was
in Hollywood recently, just doing makeup in Hollywood, and she came back.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I know that because like I've worked with her on many films. You know,
because you're Hollywood. Because that's how you roll. That's just
Hollywood.
How you roll.
Why must I have to say it myself?
Because you're Cause Hollywood like that.
So we're very lucky I was in this project. Otherwise, we would never have had Sam.
It would never have come together without you, man. You were instrumental.
Well, you know, I don't want to say it was just all about me. I'm just saying that without me, we would never have gotten Sam.
It was magical.
That was like my thing. I know she's your sister.
Yeah, I know.
But she's like, you know.
She tells me I need to thank you every day that she was there. It was crazy. Yeah.
But we did. We were very fortunate because we had all the toys. We had all the personnel. I mean, we had like the best makeup artist.
Yeah. We had Ali Haynes, one of the best sound guys ever
in the business. Yeah. I liked Ali because you know what I hate about sound guys? They always want to put stuff in you like this. Put this monitor in your back and act natural.
Yeah.
You know, take this microphone and like let
wrap
it hang out.
Wrap it around your body. Like
yeah.
You
know? And then act natural, like you're comfortable. But he's very cool with that. And he really gets very clean sound. And we didn't have to do any ADR. We didn't have to do any post syncing.
That is true. That is true.
And his sound was absolutely clean. It's
fantastic. I mean, and the best thing is just building up a team that you want to take with you for every project that you go through. I mean, all these guys that we're working with, we foster these relationships off the beginning of our short film. With the idea that, you know, as we get to like the next stage, like the feature films and stuff, that we're taking them with. We want us all to kind of stay in that same sphere because these are guys that you get on with. You can speak their language. We have that shorthand, you know, where it just becomes easier on set with every new project because we're just more comfortable and more comfortable with working with everyone. And that's what we're trying to like cultivate.
Okay. Look, I want to get to ask you guys a question. If you had all the money in the world, if you had the budgets, right, that you would have required, whatever the beginning would have cost, whatever Fire Town is going to cost, you had that money, what would you different? What would you do different? But before we go into that, I want to finish off with our style tips because it's really important. People are listening right now, and you especially, you guys are going.
I need those tips, man.
I mean, like we have style tips for everything. What do you want to know about? Do you want a suit, shirt, knitwear, trousers, hosiery?
Knitwear is definitely.
Let's talk about hosiery
list.
And underwear. Wait, this is really cool. Because you first of all, you have to have clean underwear. You guys know that, right?
What? Oh shit!
No point wearing a nice suit and you got dirty underwear, man.
Damn it.
Okay,
man.
So the most important thing: take enough. You're at starter fits.
You take green soap.
Can you take as much underwear as you like? Sean?
To be sure.
Are you allowed to?
I don't know what the list is and what.
No, but hang on. You get to start a fence, right? Yeah. And they tell you you can only take one pair of undies.
I need some socks.
I take some green soap with me and I'll wash at night and put it to dry. Sleep naked in the bed.
You can. Anything can happen. Anything can happen.
That's true.
Like, what if, what's that really hot chick? What was her name again? Oh gosh. Hang on. What's that? What's going on?
There's someone calling into the show. Take the call. Let's see. Caller, you're on line one. How can we help you?
Dang. Okay. Scarlett Johansson. She's probably going to be there. Mm-hmm. And there you are, Brad. You only took one pair of underwear.
Oh, damn it.
Naomi Watts. Don't talk to
her. Naomi Watts, right? You got lucky. She loved your movie. She was at the beginning. And you know, as a director, you're a very powerful man. Because once this beautiful actress loves your movie, she'll do anything to be in your next one. right? To be in Firetown.
Interesting. Interesting.
Next thing, you know, cut a long story short, she ends up in your hotel room. But she only took one pair of undies. And this is the last night. You've been there for 4 days. What are you going to do, man?
What are you going to do? It's like a pub quiz.
What are you doing?
Gonna call?
Pub quiz. Pub quiz, hot shot. You only got one pair underwear. It's been 4 days. What are you going to do?
Plan A is just get in the shower. Just get in the shower.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Just get in the shower.
Get in there. Just get cleaned up, you know. And
okay, we'll tell you what to do.
Okay, yeah, Mr. President, and after you're in the shower, what would you do next?
I think this is PG. We're going to keep PG.
No, no, it's okay. I hope you didn't tell your mom to listen to this. I told mine not to listen, so I can say what I like. But this is what Black Lives suggest. When it comes to hoisery is socks, by the way, okay, and underwear. Never wear sports socks, guys, unless you're actually doing sports. So no white socks with a black suit. Okay?
And no, even if the socks... unless you're Michael Jackson, just saying.
Yeah, but those were like diamond-studded socks. Or that's at least true. They were Swarovski crystal socks.
Yeah, that's good. That's like okay? A
cost. And even if they're black sports socks, it's a no-no. No sports socks.
Okay.
They got to be dress socks.
Check.
Okay, throw out all socks with holes in them. You never know when you have to be asked to take your shoes off. I have to be honest, today I was in a rush. One of my favorite pairs of socks has a hole in it, the one I'm wearing right now. I'm wearing a sock with a hole in it. I'm sorry.
That's cold, man. I don't know if I can stay in this room.
It's cold.
You didn't know that. You wouldn't have known if I
was not aware of that when I arrived.
Okay, this interview is over.
Yeah, we're done here. We're done. All right.
You guys can go. But I'm just saying, like, that happened. I was in a rush. I was only seeing you guys. Okay? But I don't know. Something might happen in my day. Maybe Naomi White.
Maybe you passed Leanne Liebenberg in the hall.
Exactly. And she asked me to take off my shoes. And that might be the deal breaker.
Because she does that a lot.
And she does that a lot. Before we go any further, can I see your socks? That's me. I'm out of that game.
Wow.
I've messed myself up.
It's a dark world.
I had a chance with Leanne Liebenberg, but I was wearing the wrong socks. Don't let that happen to you, Brad.
I'm done. Never. Never.
Noted.
I'm talking to you too, by the way, Sean. Don't think that just because you're sitting there and I'm not looking at you all the time, I'm looking at Brad over here. This applies to you too. I know that your wife is probably going to pack for you, so you have an advantage.
Yeah, but if my wife was here right now, she'd tell you
that you don't
shout
have
out
any
to
socks.
The beautiful Jerry.
Jerry, what's up?
But if she was here right now, she'd tell you
that
I happen to... One of the biggest things in my budget actually is socks. Regular purchasing of socks. I'm not one to really wear washed socks, unfortunately.
Okay. You are like Prince. You don't repeat your socks. You just throw them away.
God
and you
forbid
get
I have to wear socks that have been worn previously.
That's how it rolls.
If ever we make a movie and we're wondering what happened to all that budget,
extra budget?
That never went
there's
on screen.
A sock budget.
There's a sock budget.
Socks.
Okay. But you did ask about red socks. You can add flair with bright, bold socks, but avoid garish, like you're wearing a green t-shirt and green socks with black shoes.
You gotta make your socks and your shirts match.
Look, I think you took a huge chance with that. I don't know about you, Brad.
Dude,
but
I wore shorts and all-stars for my wedding, so... Wow.
What?
Let's just say.
How did she marry you?
Shit just got real.
You must have a lot of money.
I can pull some stuff off, man.
Really? You pulled it off?
Yeah, I pull it
off. Okay, next time she must be in the studio to
that's
tell
a
us.
Gangster
okay?
groom, I tell you what.
She must be in here to tell us exactly how you pull that off, because either she's like a very loving wife and she really understands, or...
Those are amazing all-stars.
I suppose. Okay, so bright doesn't have to mean tasteless, so avoid garish pictures or colors. No Bart Simpson or Incredible Hulk socks, please.
Incredible Hulk shirts work though. Yes.
Nah, Hulk shirts work, but like...
Hulk smash.
Okay. Anyway, so those are your Black Life style tips. We're going to give you more style tips later.
I feel blessed to have heard that. Thank you.
Mm. Yeah. By the way, you're probably going to be choosing a ready-to-wear suit, right? This is like a suit tip. Mm. You're going to get it.
That's definitely
going to be off the rack.
We need a tux.
Okay.
Good tux.
You need to take it into a tailor. Have you got time to take it into a tailor for an alteration?
We don't.
Yeah, right.
Look, I'm not gonna
we
be
leave
all,
on Monday.
I'm it's not going to be gonna happen. Racially stereotyping, but Sean, as an Indian guy, I hope you know some Pakistani guys who are tailors.
Yeah, no, one or two in Fortsburg.
Okay, fantastic. So can you take brother here? I mean, you're Jewish. You should know some people as well, damn it.
I'm a really bad Jew, though. It's
you're a really bad Jew.
It's not even going to... That's not even good.
You know that black people call really nice clothes Jewish?
Well, I know now.
Hey, stop talking Jewish, guys. You know what happened to Trevor Noah? I don't want to be like 2 years down the line and then with the next what.
We're about to get some Jewish money from Hollywood and I said Jewish like more than three times.
Yeah.
No, but this is like a compliment. Like in South Africa, right? If you're wearing really nice clothes, you say, hey, lekker Jewish, mi bra. Because
I remember that.
Because like in the old days, and up to this day, to a certain extent, but more than ever, in the old days, the tailors, there was like a whole street, downtown Joburg.
Okay.
And those tailors were all Jewish people, right? And all the best material, all the best clothing were sold at Jewish shops. So the clothes were called like Jewish.
Wow, okay. The more you know, I didn't know that.
So there you go. So thank we can you. Put that thank in five times. So,
I'm
you
know, throwing that in there.
My we're, character can be like,
let's go to
got
a Jewish,
Jewish
guy. Well, that's a nice yeah. some cultural,
bro,
some Jewish, cultural dialogue.
Which is I'm going to go buy some like lekker clothes. So you need to take your stuff to an to a tailor.
Yeah, we'll,
to
we'll,
alter,
try and,
okay?
we'll try and get some priority on that.
And guys, please keep your suit jacket fastened when you're standing up. Okay, Brad?
Don't Sean? Show our beer bellies.
Okay, maybe that's for me more than you.
Yeah.
But really, it makes you look slimmer. It's the in thing right now. Okay. So when you stand up, you button. When you sit down, you unbutton. And only two buttons.
Only two.
Not
no, the bottom.
Only actually,
never the bottom one.
You gotta do
never
one.
The bottom one.
You
never
gotta
bottom.
Do one. It's actually one. My tailor said one.
No, if it's, look, if it's a three button suit, you button.
My
two.
Tailor still said one.
I don't know what your tailor is talking about.
No, my tailor is the.
This guy's changing rules.
You needed
tailor.
To see my wedding suit, dude.
Listen.
You need to see me in my wedding suit.
Don't make me pull out my credentials, man.
Dude, you want to compare? I can.
You know, yeah. I was in GQ Top 10 Dress Best that, Men.
GQ did not know about me.
Okay.
Oh. GQ okay. was not.
Like,
GQ?
Not just once.
If anybody from GQ
I've
is listening.
Been like one of South Africa's.
If
I've,
anybody
I've actually
from GQ.
Been South Africa's style icon, blah, blah, blah. You know, I know it was
got
like.
You there, man.
Back in the early 2000 and something.
Exactly.
Nearly 10
exactly.
years.
There was a time. There was a time.
10 years ago.
But there's nobody you know? Reading GQ 10 years ago.
People reading GQ. Okay. Yeah. Anyway. So, what was I asking you guys before? I was asking you about something
good
very
Lord
specific.
Don't wear green socks. I think was my
you
don't wear green socks.
Something about the foam. I was supposed to be talking about foams.
We're supposed to be talking about foams,
yeah,
right? Okay. You guys
if we had all the money in the world.
Yeah, if you had all the money in the world, what would you different? What would you have done differently? First with the beginning.
With the beginning, we would have made it the end.
There's an amazing trip in Europe we would have loved to check out.
No, really. So it would have been exactly the same budget, but the budget would have taken us
exactly. We would have had an extra bit for like the touring side.
I would have bought food instead of cooking biryani.
Ah, no, that's not a good idea.
Yeah, no. If
no, we preferred the cooked biryani.
If we actually, if we had the right resources, well, I mean, like the proper kind of resources, we would have definitely been able to extend the shoot and make it way less stressful than it was. I mean, we had to shoot the film in like 2 days, and
it's a 10-minute film though. I mean,
exactly.
12 minutes, right?
Well, that's it. But I mean, if you want to get, you know, you want to get things perfect. So, you know, even just an extra day would have helped.
Yeah, like all those mistakes that you made, we had to like just forgive
I fluff
them.
A lot. I'm very bad with my
language. Like, oh, man, it was hard to me.
I'm sorry, Brad.
Grammar thanks, and all sorts
grammar,
of things.
I'm terrible.
Wrong, you know?
English is not my mother's tongue. Should have written it in Sibedi. Then I would have got it. You know?
Yeah, no, but we would have definitely, yeah, I think time would have been just a little bit better
time?
For us. You know, we would have had more time to shoot, you know, prepare, shoot.
Yeah.
Just, you know, Hollywood, one take for, I mean, one shot the whole day kind of thing, you know, and we did a whole 12 minutes worth of film in 2 days.
But I think sometimes, I mean, when you look at a South African, the industry, the reality of where we are, I don't think we have the time to be indulgent like that, even if we had the budgets. Because let's be honest, right, guys? If you're going to spend 20 million rands on a film, 50 million rands, that's a $2 million movie. In America, that's a no-budget film.
It's nothing, yeah.
A low-budget film in America is $20 million. So let's say they give you $20 million. To make that money back, that's 200 million rands. Okay, you have to make four times that money at the box office before the movie even goes to
that's
Mnet,
it.
Video on demand, blah, blah,
I mean,
blah.
Yeah.
I mean, Mnet itself to screen your film pays you like 400,000, okay, on that Sunday night.
It's a hard life.
And you spend $20 million. You got a long way to make that money back.
Look, it's a blessing and a curse. I mean, the more money that you get, the more return you have to make, and the more you want it, the more of a risk it is for investors and stuff. So it is, like you say, it's a balancing act. So you want to kind of find that sweet spot where you're comfortable with the money that you're getting in, and you're going to be comfortable with the return that you're going to be able to get out from the film.
Do you think that as South African filmmakers, we can get to a point where we're like the Australians? I mean, Sean, you know, Australia and New Zealand, they basically have a little Australia in America now, a little New Zealand. Every other nation's film industry, even the Bollywood industry, they export their talent at some point to Hollywood. We're the only film industry. Well, we're exporting some, but we're really not at the same level as everyone else.
I tell you what, for me, to Michel, is and to get serious a little bit here, because in our industry, I find the disconnect, and I have been fortunate in the last 10 years to have worked in television in advertising as well as in film now, you know? So I've got a little bit of perspective from all sides. And what I found to be the disconnect is that none of us tend to talk to each other in those spaces.
All right.
For example, the advertising guys have access to these brands and things like that. And brands have money, you know? And there's so many opportunities to
make the best ads in the world.
Exactly. And we have so many opportunities to sort of bring in the branded entertainment sort of angle, you know, to sort of leverage the brand's money to help us along, you know. But it's such a challenge because everybody's got an ego and everybody needs to be that guy in the process, you know what I mean? And so what tends to happen is that all the wheels just come off and nothing happens, you know, nothing gets done.
I mean, I can imagine if James Bond was a South African film and Aston Martin had given James Bond a car, James Bond would have probably had to mention Aston Martin like 15 times in the movie. I'm about to go chase those bad guys in my amazing Aston Martin DB9 with cruise control and blah blah blah. Get it now at Aston Martin for only 6,599 rands per month with a balloon payment. You know what I'm saying?
Terms and conditions apply.
Our marketing guys, I don't know if they're stupid. I'm sorry, I'm going to say it like that. If you're listening and you're marketing, I don't know if you're stupid or you're just too arrogant to understand how these things work. Because with James Bond, it works by him not mentioning all that stuff. Okay? With him not being forced, the marketing guy is on set making sure that we actually bloody well see that it's actually an Aston Martin by going right into the logo on the car. Like, we can see it's a bloody Aston Martin, man, and that's what makes it cool.
For sure. And also, but even if you want to go a little bit into their space, take the movie with Tom Hanks, that Castaway film where FedEx was like a big player in it. It was so in your face, that brand, but it worked inside the story.
It worked from a story point of view. It wasn't FedEx forcing themselves on it, right?
The CEO of FedEx was in the film making that announcement about the plane crash. You know what I mean? He put himself out there and it even worked in that space. You know what I mean? So we really got to get clever with the way we craft. And I mean, Brad, this is where, I mean, him and I have this fight all the time because I'm trying to get him to think like that because as a writer, as the person crafting the story, he's very precious about the story, which is obviously the first thing and that's the priority.
Yes, we're slaves to the story.
But at the same time, surely we can craft in
that. But we don't need that. I mean, Brad can make his own brands. He made Puffin Pops.
Oh, wow. Puffin Pops, yeah, man.
You gotta get creative with these things, right? We can't get a license from
Brad
Kellogg's.
Brad can make his own brands, okay? He doesn't need Kellogg's.
But Sean's got a point there because at the end of the day, it also has to inform story. So you want to have, if you can work it in where it's a natural fit, then that's the ideal situation.
So is that something that you're considering to do with Firetown as you're rewriting?
It's definitely something that we're open to, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's whatever helps us get the funding that we need. It's a conversation that we're totally open to having.
I mean, I think the themes for a film like Firetown already, you know, when it comes to branding, there's a lot that you can put in there. One, the theme is it's about how do you deal with something precious, like the most precious thing in your life, which is your child, whether it be a daughter or a son. In this case, it happens to be a daughter being kidnapped. And to what lengths would you go to get that person back, right? Already, right there and there. I'm thinking, if I was Apple, I'd be like, she has to have an iPhone because maybe the kid had another iPhone in a pocket. And you know, you've got location settings.
Well, mentioned that because that actually might just be in the story.
And find my phone, you know, find my iPhone could be in there. And she tries that. But actually, these guys go around that and blah, blah, blah. So we can see that actually in the real world, that's one way of safeguarding your loved ones, because had she reacted faster, maybe then she would have been able to find out where her kid was and blah blah, you know.
Exactly.
Already that's where I think the branding works
exactly,
and it works for the story, but it shows off the capability of, for example, an iPhone.
Yeah, but all the American shows get it so right. I mean, they're always looking at, you watch CSI and then they'll bring an iPad up to do something and it'll be Microsoft's new technology. And
but
whatever,
don't you think that's because the American filmmakers have more power than the brand people? Whereas in South Africa, we are basically going to the brands and begging. Like, there's no other way we're going to get this money. Please, can you help us? Just give us 1 million rand for this 20 million rand film. But they're like, for that 1 million, you're going to shit blood.
Yeah. No, but I think that's my case in point, really, is that we shouldn't have to be about who's got what power. I think that the medium is the power. I think the audience is the reason why it gives it that power. And I think we all need to say that our common goal is to reach that audience. And we want to get the film to those audience. You want to get your brand to them. How can we collaborate and how can we make that work?
All right, cool.
For sure.
Well, we're almost out of here, but I just had to mention, we were supposed to talk about Volkswagen has unveiled its 2015 Touran, but we won't talk about that actually.
No, talking about car brands, sorry, if I can just also like, give one more shout out to
your car. Like, Opel. Okay, good for them.
Opel has
it's like a mommy and daddy car, but like it's a small version.
Can I?
Sorry, I'm just like so. Like, why would I have, why would I want to talk about that?
I'm just saying, Opel is letting us drive around Cannes in the new
and
Opel
that's amazing,
Mokka.
And we love them for that.
What's an Opel Mokka?
It's a new
mock-up of what
SUV model that's
so. Who's
out.
Driving?
Well, we'll both probably have a
Sima. Who's got the keys to my Mokka?
Yeah, but they've been kind enough to support us as well, you know, when you're trying to get around places.
Yeah, okay. We've given your brands enough. We've given them enough shout-outs, okay? So they're giving you a car. That's wonderful. At least you won't be at South Africans there riding around in a taxi. Because Lord knows you guys can't actually afford a taxi.
We can't afford much.
Let's just be honest about this. Like, the support in terms of how you're getting out there. How's this been able to happen? Once again, own pockets.
Yeah, lots of own pockets.
It's a mix. It's a mix of.
It's funny because the black guy's not going. The Jewish guy's going. The Indian guy's going. But the black guy, he's not going anywhere.
I'm not saying anything.
Because we're talking
about
own pockets, right? Because my baby mama. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, okay. But we've had to obviously get the word out there about the form we've been
but
in.
Let's be on the real though. I mean, you have had like NFVF has come on board. They really have. They're really helping us out.
That's been
this.
A big help. Yeah, they're providing some financial assistance to Sean and us for like getting, you know, the film there and providing us that enabling us to get to Cannes on. You know, and easing up some of that financial burden, which has been great. I mean, yeah, it's been
some, actually, but not all, clearly.
Yeah, some. Yeah. A portion. I mean,
well, unfortunately, there's a lot of people like lining up for that kind of thing, so it has to be some, unfortunately.
But you're the only people who actually have a film screening there. Surely it should be okay, you first, we'll sort you out, make your trip comfortable, and then you other guys who just want to go to Cannes on a free trip, motherfuckers, stand in line.
That's why I wish you were head of NFVF, Tamisha. That would be great.
Don't worry, it's happening soon. With my ANC contacts, anyone. One of these days I will be the head of something.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, we're out of here. Thank you for joining us, guys. We'll see you in Cannes. Enjoy the trip.
Thanks very much.
A lot, man.
That has been Black Life in our new time slot. Check us out next week, 11 to 12 p.m. every Thursday. From me, Tamisha Masha, I am so glad Ville-Marie and Monobisi weren't here because this was the greatest show ever. Just kidding. See you guys next week. I miss you guys. BC, come back. Later.
Cliffcentral.com.